Good morning, happy Sunday, and welcome to On the Weekend Edition. I am your host, Brian Pettaway, and I'm going to be with you for about another 60 minutes or so. So thank you very much for tuning in this morning. And I'm going to make it worth your while. You will not regret it, because this morning I'm going to be speaking to a hero, a bona fide, genuine hero. Now, she doesn't wear a cape, wear a utility belt, nor does she leap over tall buildings in a single bound. But the work that she's been doing in the city of Baltimore for years and throughout the state of Maryland, honestly, is honestly superhero-like stuff. And once I found out exactly what she does and how she does it and how long she's been around, I knew that she was someone that I needed to speak to and introduce to you guys. Now, we're also going to talk to the Petty. Now, this NFL season is over, and we do have, again, once again, the Kansas City Chiefs as Super Bowl champions. But the XFL has started, and just as I promised, the Petty's going to be on top of the XFL as well, because they're playing every Sunday, and I think they're playing on Saturdays too, but the Petty is going to fill us in on the teams that are playing, the cities in which they're playing, who to pick, who's the favorite, the players that are from the NFL that have crossed over to the XFL. He's got a lot to talk about today. But first, you're going to start with me doing the thing that I love to do most, and that is give you some news commentary on what's been going on for the last 2 weeks in the city and around the country. So I hope you're feeling great, because I'm feeling great. I've got lots to talk about, so let's get right to it. Fox 45 News is reporting that a new bipartisan bill that is also backed by Governor Wes Moore is aiming to tackle the ongoing problem of drug overdose in this state. Maryland is now recording over 2,000 drug overdose deaths per year. If the bill becomes law, it will require hospitals conducting urine tests in patients with a suspected overdose to also test for fentanyl. A new report surfaced by the University of Maryland Center for Substance Abuse Research, and it found that most emergency departments are screening only 5% of overdose patients for fentanyl. And when the fentanyl tests were conducted, positivity rates exceeded 40%. This bill proposed, voted on, passed, would be a huge deal, because fentanyl is a monster. Make no mistake about it, it does not care what race, creed, color, or socioeconomic background you come from. It has killed people of all walks of life all across the country, but in particular, young people. In one high school, High Point High School in Beltsville, Maryland, there have been over 30 overdoses in that high school since the beginning of the school year. It has gotten so bad that the school system, health department, and police are teaming up to hand out the opioid antidote Narcan, and they're teaching parents how to use it. So the bill proposed to screen each suspected overdose patients for fentanyl is a really big deal, because it will allow not only law enforcement, but also health officials to know what area of the city and state the fentanyl and opioid crisis is concentrated in, which will enable first responders to be better prepared when they show up to an overdose scene. So for me, this proposed bill to screen every suspected overdose patient for fentanyl is a no-brainer. I just hope that the bill is passed soon. Also going on in the city, prosecutors have requested that the long-awaited federal perjury trial of former Baltimore City State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby begin on Halloween. Now, I don't know if that's a good sign or a bad sign, but earlier this month, the case got delayed a third time after the judge allowed Mosby's entire defense team to withdraw due to potential conflicts of interest. Federal public defender James Wyda has now been assigned to represent Mosby during her trial and needs time to brush up on the case. As most of us already know, Mosby is accused of withdrawing $90,000 from her city deferred compensation plan under false pretenses and using that money to buy a vacation home in Florida. I mean, look, man, at this point, I don't even care. I'm not even interested in the case anymore. I'm a news guy, and I could really care less about what happens in this case at this point. It's been delayed so many times that it's like a bad play waiting to start, and I'm just sitting here waiting for these actors to come on stage that don't want to seem to come from behind the curtain. So I really don't care anymore. I hope that at the end of the day, she's found not guilty. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think she's going to be found guilty of that and perjury. I mean, just based on the fact that her entire defense team quit is not a good look of confidence for Marilyn Mosby. Oh, and by the way, I'm still trying desperately to get Mayor Brandon Scott to come and talk to us here on the Weekend Edition, but apparently he's a very difficult guy to get a hold of. So I want to talk a little bit about some things that are going on in other parts of the country. And if you have not been paying attention, I need you to start paying attention to Florida, and in particular, the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis. There is a new Florida GOP-sponsored education bill that would force state colleges and universities to shut down any diversity, inclusion, and equity programs, as well as gut a variety of gender studies and race majors. Now, the bill, called HB 99, was filed by Representative Alex Andrade, who's a Republican from Pensacola, Florida, with the full support of Governor Ron DeSantis. If the bill is passed, the bill would force state colleges to remove from its program any major or minor in critical race theory, gender studies, intersectionality, or any derivative major or minor of these belief systems. This bill proposed would also force universities to be prohibited from funding or supporting any programs or campus activities that espouse diversity, equity, and inclusion, or critical race theory. Late last month, the governor announced legislative plans to, and I quote, ensure Florida's public universities and colleges are grounded in the history and philosophy of Western civilization, which included prohibiting diversity, equity, and inclusion, as well as so-called critical race theory. The bill comes after a battle between DeSantis and the College Board, which offers AP college-level courses to high school students across the country, over an AP African American Studies course. DeSantis rejected the course in January, saying it imposed a political agenda. What I will say about Ron DeSantis is he is not hiding in anybody's closet. He is in our face telling everyone in Florida and across the country who wants to hear it that he doesn't want to hear anything about African Americans as it pertains to American history. He doesn't want to hear about slavery. He doesn't want to hear about Jim Crow. He doesn't want to hear about the Civil Rights Movement. He is trying to wipe out any and every curriculum in high schools and colleges that teaches about that history. The bill that he proposes would also put hiring decisions in the hands of each university's board of trustees, a body selected entirely by the governor and his appointees. Now, as scary as this proposed bill is in Florida, there are two things that are even scarier. The fact that what one southern state does and is able to get away with, another southern state governor is sure to follow and try, as we've seen with the abortion laws. It was a domino effect. It started with one southern state challenging Roe v. Wade, and then they got away with passing a bill that restricted abortions in that state. Another state followed, and shortly thereafter, because of the extreme right-winged conservative makeup of the Supreme Court, the federal protection of abortion rights for women, known as Roe v. Wade, was overturned. The second scary thing, and to me the scariest, and always has been the scariest when it comes to Ron DeSantis, is that he's running for president in 2024. And he is the front runner for the Republican Party. And as crazy and as erratic and scary as Trump was as president, Ron DeSantis is even scarier because he's not crazy. And he's been very skilled at turning his blatant racist views into policy. In fact, he's so bad, and I don't make this up, but Donald Dilbeck, a death row inmate, before his execution, his last words were, "I know I hurt people when I was young. I really messed up. But I know Ron DeSantis has done a lot worse. He's taken a lot from a lot of people, and I speak for all men and women and children. He's put his foot on all of our necks." Now, this is a death row inmate using his last words before he's killed on Thursday by lethal injection. So I'm just saying, if you have not paid attention to Ron DeSantis till this point, because he's the governor of Florida, and you think that what he does down there does not affect you up here, pay attention, because the Republican Party loves this man. The extreme right love this man. And he may very well be the next president of these United States. Speaking of presidents, also in the news, Jimmy Carter, who turned 98 last year, became the oldest living U.S. president in history after passing George H.W. Bush, who died in late 2018 at 94. Unfortunately, Jimmy Carter is in hospice care. His family announced Saturday that the former president was entering hospice care following many years of declining health. The nation's 39th president has kept a low public profile in recent years due to the coronavirus pandemic, but has continued to speak out about risk to democracy around the world, which has been a longtime cause of his. The former President Carter beat brain cancer in 2015, but faced a series of health scares in 2019, and consequently underwent surgery to remove pressure on his brain. A peanut farmer and U.S. Navy lieutenant before going into politics, Carter, a Democrat, eventually served one term as governor of Georgia and one term as president of the United States from 1977 to 1981. The former president is widely revered for his championing of human rights, and his brokering of the Camp David Accords in 1978 with Egyptian President Anwar Sadat and Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin remains central to his legacy. A statement was released by the Carter family saying that after a series of short hospital stays, former U.S. President Jimmy Carter today decided to spend his remaining time at home with his family and to receive hospice care instead of additional medical intervention. Two crazy facts about Jimmy Carter. First is that during his presidency in 1978, he had solar panels installed on the White House roof. Technology and science that was way ahead of its time. Now, of course, when Ronald Reagan was elected into office, who was Jimmy Carter's successor, he had those solar panels removed. And the other, which is one of Jimmy Carter's greatest achievements, he felt, was that the United States did not fight against any country during his presidency. No American or any other national was killed under the banner of an American war. And that makes him a unique president in American history. All right, the question of the day is, how do you feel about Dwayne Wade's daughter, Zaya, being granted a name change and legal transition in court? On Friday, Dwayne Wade's daughter, who was actually born a male, was granted an official name change and assignment of gender, according to courtroom documents. Now, while Zaya has gone by her name since 2020, her now legal name is Zaya Malachi Aramis Wade, according to a ruling filed in Los Angeles Superior Court. The judge also granted an official stamp of approval for the 15-year-old's legal transition that would allow her sex markers on her documents to match her gender identity. Since coming out as a transgender in 2020, Zaya has received unconditional support from both her former 41-year-old NBA star father, Dwayne Wade, and her stepmother, Gabrielle Union, who was 50. But her biological mother has always had a major problem with it, saying that she was too young to make those kind of decisions about her sexual identity, and that both Dwayne Wade and Gabrielle Union were trying to profit off of the situation by outing their daughter, where she was clearly too young of a child to make the decision for herself. Tell me what you think. Hit me up on Instagram at @onwithbrianpettaway. Let me know how you feel about this situation. It's been pretty public for a few years now, and I hear both sides of the situation. I don't have a dog in the fight. I truly believe live and let live. But let me know what you think about it. Again, hit me on Instagram at @onwithbrianpettaway. I'll read your comments and read them back next week when I come on the air. All right, at the beginning of the show, I told you that I was going to introduce you to a hero today, and I am a man of my word, so that's exactly what I'm going to do. But first, I want to tell you how we got here. Every single week, I come on this show, and I talk about the violence in this city. I talk about the shootings, I talk about the drugs, I talk about the education failures that go on in this city in the public school system. But what pains me overwhelmingly every morning when I read a newspaper article in Baltimore City is the amount of young people that are losing their lives to gun violence or overdose. In fact, just this past week, Governor Wes Moore called the violence in Baltimore amongst our young people an epidemic. We talk about the suspects, the shooters, the people who are doing the shooting. We talk about the victims, the people who are being shot. We talk about the drug dealers, and we talk about the users, the ones that are killing themselves with overdoses of drugs. But what about the people stuck in the middle? The people who are grieving these young victims, the victims who are never coming back to these families. Who's taking care of them? How are they grieving? How are they getting past this? And I never really gave it too much thought, actually, until I heard about Roberta's House. Roberta's House is here in Baltimore City, and I gotta be honest, I'm ashamed that I didn't know about it. But Roberta's House is a safe place where children, teens, and adults discover that they are not alone in their grief. It is a nonprofit family grief support center, and it is the only one of its kind in the country designed specifically for African Americans. And today, I am fortunate enough to have the president and co-founder of Roberta's House. But somehow, I don't feel worthy of introducing her, because in 2014, she was recognized as a national hero and, in a tribute, given the CNN Hero Award. So I will let Taye Diggs, who introduced her to the world that night, introduce her to you today.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to present CNN hero, Annette March Greer.
Okay, 1500, please help me welcome Annette March Greer. Annette, how are you feeling this morning?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Brian, for the invitation.
No, thank you so much for coming on. I have to be honest, I didn't know a whole lot about your organization or your foundation, but I'm so glad that I found out about it, and I'm so glad that I have an opportunity to have you on.
This is Roberta's House.
Okay.
Family Grief Support Center, and we are located in Baltimore City and in Prince George's County,
okay,
Maryland. What we do is we provide grief education and support programs to children as young as 4, to adults as old as 99, if they're willing and able to come.
Right.
We have over 15 different programs to provide services, free programs, support groups, and counseling for individuals that have had all types of losses, from homicide to the loss of an infant, to natural causes, to moms who've also experienced the death of a child, to teenagers. We have a bereavement camp for kids during the summer months, where we take them away for a 3-day adventure camp. We have educational workshops and trainings for mental health providers and social workers to get more information about the various theories around grief and loss and how to treat individuals and care for individuals who are grieving.
I just wanted to jump right in and find out what kind of background prepares you for something like this.
Well, there are people in the profession that actually do study grief and bereavement, which is the field, and death and dying, which is the field of thanatology. However, I came into this field by way of being a registered nurse, and also my family history comes from a family of funeral service. And so growing up as a young child in an African-American community, in a 3-story row house funeral home, death was an everyday part of my experience. And as I became older and learned more about, you know, health and mental health, I recognized that grief was an area that was not being addressed in our communities, and there were just too many people suffering from grief and loss. So, believe it or not, a lot of my early years was self-learning about grief. And, you know, I don't think anything happens coincidentally. There
right,
happened to
right.
have been a conference held in Baltimore called the Association of Death Educators and Counselors. And when I went to this conference, it just opened my eyes up to a new world of knowledge and research and support systems that were in place for people dealing with complicated, unresolved grief and grief in general. And so this is definitely an institution that I gained a lot of knowledge and wisdom from, and connections and relationships to begin my path. This became my journey.
Well, I know that, you know, we hear the name Marsh and your name, mm-hmm. I mean. And so what's your relation to the Marsh Funeral Home? Because they're a very well-respected and trusted funeral home in the city.
I am the second generation.
Okay.
My parents were the founders of Marsh Funeral Homes.
Okay.
And I am the youngest of 4 siblings. And this has been my passion for the last 40 years, bereavement care.
So I got to tell you, I come on every week and I try, and, you know, I'm a news guy, so I do the news, I read the news, and I literally try to avoid bombarding the listeners with news of shootings and death within the city, because I could spend an entire hour just reporting
I'm
on
sure.
that, to be honest with you. But it's hard to get around. So when you have a business like you have, how do you just avoid not getting emotionally wrapped up in all of the grieving that you are trying to help other people deal with?
Mm-hmm. So I have a staff at Roberta's House of about 27 individuals. Many of them are social workers or advocates. And we do, you're right. We listen to grief, loss, and trauma every day. And so as listeners and caregivers of, you know, you can't help but absorb some trauma.
Right.
And second, what we call secondary trauma or vicarious trauma. We cannot, as human beings, you just cannot help but absorb some of this pain and hurt that people, the stories that you're hearing all the time. So we really make it a practice to take care of each other. We have mental health days that the organization provides to our staff. For instance, this week on, well, tomorrow, Friday, we're having a little Valentine's celebration with each other here at our job. We acknowledge and recognize individuals on a monthly basis, you know, of their work. We have game days here for the staff at work to sort of, you know, we have yoga days and days that we can sort of let go, relax. And we do a lot of debriefing amongst ourselves. We have also over 165 active volunteers here that work at Roberta's House. And many of our volunteers have been through the programs because of their own personal losses. And they come back to volunteer, they're well-trained, and they reinvest back into Roberta's House by helping other people who are going through the journey that they once did. And so, you know, self-care is a very important part of our education here and teaching, because not only do we need it ourselves, but it's also important for the grieving people who are actually going through their grief. They too need to know how important it is to give themselves this time to heal and to give themselves self-care.
Okay. Why the name Roberta's House? Where did the name come from?
Good question. Roberta is my mother, okay. And she was the matriarch of the business, meaning, you know, when it was William C. March Funeral Home, and it was sort of a mom and pop type business. She was the one that thousands of families leaned upon. She was the shoulder that so many of them leaned upon. She was definitely a woman of compassion. She cared for everybody, from the homeless. I remember her making plates and telling me to take this plate outside to the man in the alley, or, you know, she helped. Both of my parents helped a lot of people with their education and gave scholarships. But she was the listening ear. As a child, I remember, you know, again, it was a funeral parlor, which was a home.
Right.
And downstairs on the first floor was the funeral parlor. I can remember sitting on the steps as a small child watching her listen to the families. She would hold them while they cried. She was also the cosmetologist, the seamstress, the makeup artist. You know, she did the hair. She did everything, you know, and she took a lot of pride in helping people to find peace at their most darkest hour, you know, just by making their loved ones look so good. And so when she passed away in 2006, my siblings and I decided that we needed, first of all, I had been doing grief counseling and running support groups probably at that time for 30 years through the March.
Okay.
Yes, through the funeral home. And it was a community outreach program at that time through March Funeral Homes. And we were the only ones doing this in the city. And so, you know, there was a dream that I longed for, to one day have a dedicated center where we could support children and adults of all ages, and we could have multiple programs. I really didn't know how this was all going to come to fruition. But in 2006, that small funeral parlor had, you know, we had since moved out of that and built a new funeral home. And it was empty, that row house. And so we decided as siblings that, you know, we were either going to sell this row house or do something, or renovate it, do something with it. So I brought up the suggestion or the idea of maybe it was time to start a nonprofit, and it would be named Roberta's House, and it would be a bereavement center. And it was actually it is today the first African-American started bereavement center in the country.
Yeah, I saw that. I was gonna ask you about that, and if that presented any challenges for you in trying to acquire money for it from the state, or like, how does that work for you?
Initially, it did. Initially, you know, I had to really advocate and educate our city officials, you know, our funders, that grief is directly related to violence, which, you know, is also directly in correlation with academic failure with our students in schools. Grief leads to pain, leads to violence. And we know that hurt people hurt people.
Absolutely.
And the other thing that is, you know, grief is also a social determinant to health. We suffer with high blood pressure. We suffer with stress. We suffer with heart disease. We suffer with diabetes. And grief, you know, in our communities, the families that come through our doors just don't experience one death loss. They experience multiple.
Right. When you started, it was primarily for adults?
Yes.
What was the transition? At what point did you decide, you know, we need to make this more wide ranging? We need to take the age down to even children.
Right. Well, throughout those 30 years of me doing adult support groups, I was frequently getting phone calls from families asking where could they take their child for support. Okay. You know, that either the child had lost a parent, you know, the parent OD'd, or they even witnessed the death of a parent, or they found their parent or grandparent, you know, whatever. And there was no place to refer. There was no place in Baltimore. Neither was there no place that would be culturally appropriate.
Right. And that's a big thing.
To send individuals, you know, I mean, there were hospices that were doing some work that was out in the far region of the counties that we didn't have transportation to get to. And, right. And I really don't suspect it would have been culturally appropriate or fitting.
And that's a big thing. And that's a huge thing, because when you have kids, like, I saw the special on Chiron, right? The special segment on Chiron, a little young man, Chiron, whose father was killed. And he knows that his father was killed, murdered. Mm-hmm. When you deal with that kind of, and grief is grief, right? But I think that there are different kinds of grief that you have to deal with. So when you deal with children coming into you whose brothers were killed in a shooting, or father was killed in a shooting, How do you train staff to deal with that, as opposed to someone's mother dying from cancer? Or, because it's a different kind of thing. It is a cultural thing in the city.
Well, the first thing that we do in our support groups here is to get an understanding of what the family system or the grandparents or parents or whoever's caring for that child has informed that child. And we do see sometimes that the truth is not told.
Okay.
But these kids find out from other people.
Right.
You know, they find out from friends, they find out from other cousins, and that first of all can be more harmful than just telling, being honest and truthful. Okay. You know, about the situation.
Okay.
So we do oftentimes ask, you know, what does the child know? And talk to the parent or the caregiver about, you know, let's talk about this, because this could cause more harm later. And, you know, the reality is that people die of all different ways.
Yes.
Unfortunately, again, hurt people hurt people. Mm-hmm. And we also recognize that there's a lot of mental health or mental illnesses that exist, that people do things and don't know why they do things, but they do things. You know, at some point we have to talk about life, because these kids today, they're hearing gunshots, they're seeing gunshots, they're, you know, they're walking down the street and they're hearing the stories, and they, you know, they're witnessing firsthand. And we actually have a section, you know, that talks about safety in our support groups and feeling safe and making sure that, you know, you have someone you can reach out to, because things happen, unfortunately, in life, and we can't shield a child from all of that. Even when it comes to suicide, that's a big, heavy topic. Suicide is growing. Even overdoses is growing in our community just rapidly. Right. And how do you explain that, you know, to a child?
Very difficult.
Many of these kids know that their, you know, family members do have substance abuse problems. And overdoses can be accidents. You know, they can be accidents.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't necessarily mean that the person wanted to die, even with suicide.
Right.
You know, usually people are suffering with a mental pain or an emotional pain that they just need to be rid of. And it's their only way out. And so even helping kids to find forgiveness in their family members and, you know, to still look upon the good memories that they had with that individual is very, very important for that child to move forward.
When you refer to hurting people, hurt people, which is very true, it sounds like your grief counseling is almost trying to stop a cycle that just keeps going, in particular in this city. Do you find that to be the case? Do you find when you talk to one child or a parent and you help them with their grief, it kind of hopefully stops something else from happening?
The cycle.
Yes, ma'am.
Absolutely. That is our outcome. That is our long-range goal.
Okay.
And we do have several success stories here at Roberta's House. We've had young kids that started at the age of 6 and are 18, about to go to college now. Some have gone off to college. Some have gone into the military. We have a history of kids that are young people that we are so proud of. And unfortunately, we have a few that still got caught up in the streets. You know, because we're one part, but they also have to have a support system at home.
Right.
You know, that reinforces what we're providing here. But I would say we have a group of talented young people that are now peer leaders, and can come back to volunteer here at Roberta's House and to be leaders in their schools and in their communities. And have been touched, you know, by loss, by death, and tragic losses.
That's the other thing I was going to mention. You mentioned schools and leadership in schools. The education piece is also a huge piece here, because I lost my mother when I was 17. And I was a great student until that year, and then I had a problem concentrating in math. So I can imagine what younger kids are going through and how it affects their schooling. Do you find that the grief counseling that you provide even helps them in their education process?
Oh, absolutely. Because, first of all, working through grief requires work and requires energy. And you have to be actively participating in your grief journey. But unfortunately, many people don't know this, and even young people.
Right.
You know, our immediate reaction to pain is to suppress it, to act out. Especially young people will act out because they are hurting and they're really reaching out for help and attention. And with grief comes the lack of concentration, the inability to sleep, not being able to focus, being very emotional, uncontrollable, you know, waves of emotions and feelings. And young people can be very overwhelmed and get consumed by that and not understand what's going on. They don't understand that this is grief. You are mourning someone that you cared about and that you loved. And these are normal reactions and feelings. And so what are you going, let's talk about what are you going to do when these feelings come upon you, and when you're feeling angry, or when you're feeling lonely, or when you just want to cry. You know, this is where we kind of give our young people the space and the permission to allow these feelings to flow. And to make meaning out of these feelings.
What does that look like? You know, when a child is acting out, and then people act out differently, but do you give them the room to shout? Or,
we have a punching bag here, boxing bag.
All right.
We have a boxing bag here, and it's a room that's cushioned all the way around, and these kids can, look, adults need it too.
I could use that room from time to time.
Right. They can go and punch this bag out, you know, as much as they need to. They do a lot of arts and crafts. And expression, you know, expressing their feelings. They do face masks. They crash the broken bowl and put feelings on the bowl and put the pieces back together, which, you know, is very similar to our lives that are shattered, and we have to put our lives back together. We do all kinds of activities to kind of, you know, have them express their feelings, writing even, you know, angry letters.
Wow.
To other people or to their loved one. They may not mail it, but they make these journals and they write whatever they feel at the moment and at the time. So there's so many healthy ways of dealing with frustration and anger and pain. And we give them that safe space here, as opposed to taking it out on someone else in their classroom or their friend.
When you do things like this, do you find it better or easier or more effective when the parent is not with the child, or do you encourage them to be with the child while they're in these kind of counseling sessions?
So we separate the groups by age.
Okay.
When they come, so that we have twiddles, kiddles, middles, and teens, and the adults.
Okay.
Yes, and so they all come together initially. They have a meal. We talk about the theme for the night, and you know, we have this kind of affirmation chant that we do, and then they move into their separate rooms, and so you know, they're all age appropriate in their groups as they share their stories and do their activities. Now with the adult groups, sometimes they have other family members in those adult groups with them.
Okay.
We've had groups where, you know, there was a brother, sister, aunt, cousin, you know, the whole group came.
Right.
And it was very helpful for them. Sometimes, you know, they can't quite express what they want to because they're afraid to, you know, upset someone else. But overall, you know, we find that if it does conflict with them being able to express themselves, we do advise that they, you know, separate themselves in groups. But sometimes families want to be there to support each other.
Do you have a number of how many people have gone through Roberta's house that you guys have helped?
Oh my goodness. It's well near 10,000 now.
Oh wow.
I mean, we started in 2000, and I'm going to say officially in 2008 with actually having the nonprofit.
Yeah. That's not a long time for having 10,000 people go through the system.
No, but where I'm telling you that number, okay, on average we have about 2,000 people a year.
Okay.
That come through the center itself.
Okay.
Now, we do a lot of programs at schools. So those are, you know, I mean, even if you're looking at 15 years, and if you're looking at 2,000 a year.
Yeah, yeah.
See, I mean, that tells you right there. And that's just the people that have come through the center itself.
Now, you have more than one facility at this point, correct?
Yes, we're located in Prince George's County as well. But we just completed a $14 million, 22,000 square foot facility.
Oh, wow.
In 21, state-of-the-art bereavement center. And we are so proud to have, like I said, we are the first constructed bereavement center, you know, that African Americans have established specifically for urban community.
Not just in the city, but in the state, I think you're the first African American center, correct?
In the United States.
Wow.
In the United States, wow. Sir. I am a member of several national associations that are bereavement centers and people who specialize in the field of bereavement and grief, and we are the only ones. So when others are looking to serve people of color or identify or need to get information on specific things like, you know, unfortunately, homicide deaths, they come to us. And they reach out to us. I've been a national speaker at several conventions now.
Yeah, I mean, your work is known worldwide. I mean, you are a 2014 CNN hero. How did that make you feel? Because I saw that. You got a chance to be kissed by Taye Diggs, the whole nine. So I peeped that, believe me.
Taye Diggs is listening to this. No, anyway. that was awesome. It really, you know, it really elevated our recognition in the city and in the state. It opened up a lot of opportunities for more funding and partnerships. And, you know, I am a very spiritual person, and I do believe that, you know, this is divine work, and things happen in a timely fashion in order to help us move this work even further.
Yes.
You know, we just got a congressional grant now for the state of Maryland, which is a $1 million grant, which we're now really going to expand our services in behavioral health, being able to provide mental individual one-on-one clinical services, as well as we're going to expand our learning institute that we'll be able to provide CEUs and workshops and seminars for the greater community in mental health on grief and trauma. And we're going to expand our Prince George's location to really be able to expand our services and reach more in that community, in those communities.
How did you choose Prince George's as an area for your site?
Because their demographics, whether they want to admit it or not, are very similar similar to Baltimore. You know, Prince George's County is a great county. It really is. Largely populated by African Americans and Hispanic, and they also have a growing, unfortunate number of homicide deaths and violence. And with any population, people of color, you're going to find people who are marginalized, who are dealing with health disparities and grief because of early death, you know, or sudden death or accidental deaths. Yeah. And so, you know, grief is something everybody deals with. Every last human being is going to encounter grief at some point in time in life. And we just, right. And we just want to prevent our children, especially, from growing up and carrying some type of shame or blame or guilt or anger, so that they can, you know, lead healthy, positive
lives. I am
so
thankful and proud that you're in the state of Maryland, in the city of Baltimore. But more than that, I'm thankful that somebody has decided that to try and break the cycle from a different direction. You know what I mean? Because this is a different type of breaking the cycle. But it sounds to me like it's one of the most, I guess, effective forms of it. When you stop the anger and at the grieving process, and you are able to channel it another way, or teach someone to channel it another way as a child, that's huge. And I have not heard of anything like that, to be honest with you. So kudos. I mean, that's amazing. What did you even come up with the idea? I mean, it's just amazing to me, because I would never have thought to do something like that on a large scale.
Well, growing up in the funeral service environment, in a Black community,
right,
grief was in my face every day, every moment. And I was seeing people suffer with their grief, not being able to move on, turning to drugs, you know, domestic violence, parents losing a kid, breaking up with divorces, you know, all, I mean, it was just, you know, and I believe that, you know, this was my divine purpose. So,
yeah.
You know, I saw it every day. I saw the harm that it was doing. I saw the mental illness. I saw the emotional, you know, stress and strain that death was, you know, putting on our community and the people, you know, dealing with so much loss.
Right. Well, thank you so much for seeing that and having that kind of compassion. If a family or child is dealing with grief, how do they get a hold of you? How do they get a hold of Roberta's House? How can they find out about it?
Sure. There's several ways. One, there's our number of 410-235-6633. And remember that our services are free. Secondly, you can visit our website, which is robertashouse.org, to see all the different programs. And I do want to say that, you know, if you are not local, we are doing programs that are hybrid, meaning that, you know, if you wanted to come on Zoom and be in a support group, you are welcome to that as well. Those are the ways that you can reach out.
And you said something that's very important. You said the services are free, and that's
that's
very important. And that's awesome. That's awesome. So thank you, Annette. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you for enlightening us and talking about this Roberta's House. It's amazing, and I hope that we get to talk to you again.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for spreading the good word and the good news, and continue to do that. And God bless you.
Thank you. Take care now.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. I know you hear the music, and that can only mean one thing. It is time for the Petty. Let's get him on the phone. He's going to talk to us about the new XFL league that has emerged that's taking the place of the NFL in the offseason, and he's going to help us understand these games, the teams, the cities. So let's get him on the line.
Brother B, happy Sunday to you.
Appreciate you, brother. Good to hear from you, Petty. How you doing, man?
I'm doing just great.
Good.
Getting over a little bit of the disappointment from the Super Bowl, but not me personally, just listening to over all the overconfident people that were here in the Philadelphia area that were just so disappointed and the Eagles lost to the Chiefs.
You know what, man? I looked at the score. You had the score almost dead to rights. I think you called it 38-34 KC, and it was actually 38-35. I mean, you called it 38-34 Philly, and it was 38-35 KC. So the score was dead on. It was just a matter
just
of the teams.
Just the wrong teams.
Yeah.
Just the teams wrong. That's about it.
Yeah.
I was pretty close. But you know what? You know, for me and maybe many others, the football season continues.
Yes, it does.
And we're talking about the XFL and the upcoming USFL. And, you know, first of all, let's say for us and for you guys in the Baltimore, D.C. area, I guess you can say your D.C. Defenders won yesterday. As you know, their games played on Thursdays and Saturdays, and even one, on Sunday.
Yeah.
So, you can get your fill of football in if you're a football junkie like myself. Now, we're into the third week of the XFL, and I'm still trying to get into the rules, the players, the coaches, the salaries, and all the other stuff. And I'm telling you, you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson and his former mate are the ones that's doing this thing.
Right.
You know, they're partners, and they're getting this thing going. And hopefully it will carry over, because this will be the third go-round for the XFL. The other two times, they only lasted 1 year, and then they, you know, just kind of went away. So it's kind of unique. It's fun if you like football. It's fun if you like football with a twist. And
it is fun. It's a lot of fun.
One of the things, it's two things I really, really like about the XFL, and one of them, it's got to be that three-point conversion. Oh, my goodness. If the NFL adopts this, man, oh, man.
Well, the NFL did adopt some of the things from the other seasons of the XFL. They did take a couple of things from them before.
Yeah, they did. They did. But this one, the three-point conversion, can you imagine?
Yeah, it's hot.
3 points?
It's hot.
Being a field goal? I'm talking about a touchdown and then 3 points on top of that. We're not talking about the 7 points. We're talking about 9 points now.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
That will definitely be a nightmare for bettors, though. It'll change the whole betting scheme in Vegas.
Oh, my goodness. Would it ever. Now, here's one that I really, really like. And if you're talking about teams like the Kansas City Chiefs or teams that are really good at coming back from behind and winning, this one would be fantastic. Well, you know, you have your onside kicks and all of the little things that go on in the NFL. Well, here's one for you that the XFL has. If a team is behind in the final 2 minutes of the game, instead of doing an onside kick, they can take a 4th-and-15 chance from their own 25-yard line. If they can make that conversion, then they keep rolling, they keep rolling.
Wow.
And it happened last week when a team was down 15-3 in the final 2 minutes of the game and end up winning the game 18-15.
Because of that conversion.
Because they converted that 4th-and-15 conversion. So instead of kicking off, they decided, you know what, we're going to try the 4th-and-15 and try to keep this thing rolling. I'm telling you, Brother P, man, that's
game changer.
Exciting. I would love to see the NFL do that, and that is a big game changer.
Game changer.
That's huge. It is.
You know what I love? I love how they show the instant replays in the booth with the persons that are actually calling the instant replay changes. I love it.
And that's fantastic. I love that, too. That's another thing that we don't have the, you know, privilege of seeing in the NFL. And I think the NFL should, you know, consider looking at that, because we would like to know, what's the NFL official or the person that's the review official, what are they looking at? What's the
right.
deciding factor
right.
for them to say that the call will stand, or we're going to make a change?
Right.
So it's kind of interesting in finding out what, you know, what goes on in their minds and what's their thought process when they're reviewing a play.
I don't even know how many teams are actually in the league. I don't know.
Well, actually, there are only 8 teams in the league.
Okay.
And, you know, they play a 10-game schedule. And the 8 teams are from Arlington, Houston, Orlando, out in Vegas, San Antonio, Seattle, St. Louis, and of course, D.C.
Right. Now, D.C. Apparently is the most popular team in the league right now.
Yeah. And you know what? There are several NFL players, former NFL players, that are in the league. And there are a few NFL players, former NFL players, who are head coaches. And notably, Hines Ward.
Right.
To play for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right.
Rod Woodson. And here's an old name that's coaching again, Wade Phillips. He just can't stay away from
who is he coaching?
And he's coaching Houston. And, you know, it's good to see Wade back in the game. I like Wade. I always like Wade Phillips as a coach. I did, you know.
Huh.
And to see him back in the coaching is just great. And you know what? I told you there's a name, an old NFL name. Well, not an old guy, but a guy who's been kind of in and out of the NFL. And he's back in the NFL.
Who's that?
And hopefully, well, he's back in the he's back playing professional football. Excuse me. He's in the XFL. And maybe this time, he can maybe get back into the NFL based on this XFL
play. Who are you talking about?
I'm talking about that guy who's been suspended so many times. I'm talking about Josh Gordon. He's back playing professional football. He is in the XFL, and he's playing out in Seattle.
Really?
He's a Seattle Sea Dragon. So let's see how he fares this go around.
Okay.
But there's some other notable names. One being a former number one draft pick from the NFL. Now I'm talking about Paxton Lynch. And here's a little something about Paxton Lynch. He's been benched when he played in the NFL. He's been benched when he played in the USFL. He's been benched when he played in the CFL. And now he's been benched in the XFL. I think it's time for Paxton Lynch
to pack
it up and just go use that college degree that he has and just do something else.
I'm
hoping, hopefully he won't get benched if he, puts his resume out there with a D. So, talk about another former NFL player who's doing it for the love of the sport. I'm talking about A.J. McCarron.
Yeah,
and this guy was a pretty decent backup quarterback, and he could probably be on someone's team as a backup right now. But, it's something that he said. He said he'd rather take less money and play in the XFL so that he can play, be on the field, and make some memories for his sons. And I thought that was just great.
Okay.
He's not doing it for the money. He's doing it for the love of the sport and something for his kids to see, when they get a little older and say, look, this is what your dad did. So, I think on a Thursday evening or a Saturday afternoon, check out the XFL. You just might like it. I'm going to start looking at it a little bit more carefully and, give us a little bit more insight.
Right.
And it's going to be nice. And I'm looking at, some of the salaries. And, they're not making the big money that the NFL. Let me tell you something, Brother B. They're making a small portion of what the minimum of what the NFL player would be making.
Give me a ballpark.
Well, let's say about $70,000.
Okay.
As opposed to $750,000.
Yeah, 10%.
That's huge.
Yeah.
That's huge. But you know what, Brother B? This is a good thing for a lot of the younger players who didn't get drafted, who couldn't make a practice squad, and who has the talent to say, hey, I may belong in the league with the big boys. So let me go somewhere and put it out there and let them see that, hey, I can still play.
Right.
From my understanding, most of the people who are in the XFL are like maybe from player number 60 to player number 75 on a regular roster. And as you know, NFL players only carry 53 players and some practice squad players. So these guys, they're right there on possibly being on the NFL roster, but their skills just have to be a little bit more better than what they are. And it's like maybe like you can almost say like it's the minor leagues. Like with baseball, you have your minor leagues, your double-A, your triple-A, then you have the majors. You can kind of say the XFL is kind of the same thing.
Right.
And hopefully some of these players can move on and get into the NFL.
Make it to the show. And
exactly. There you go. You got it, Brother B. Make it to the show. So, I the ticket prices aren't that bad. The attendance, it's a little.
It's going to pick up. It's going to pick up.
But hopefully, The Rock and his former Danny Garcia, they can, inject something into it, make it a little bit more exciting. I like that 3-point conversion. I like what they're doing with the 4th and 15 and the possibility of being able to come from behind and winning the game or tying it up. And let's see where this XFL goes. And let's see what happens with the USFL that's going to be starting next month.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, man. I really appreciate you, Petty, because the insight helps us set up the season. So I'm looking forward to the games. I'm looking forward to watch the talent emerge and get better. So I appreciate you coming on today and talking to us about it.
And here's a little tidbit for you. Do you know with the XFL and the USFL, there's like football all the way up to July. And as you know, training camp starts for the NFL in July.
Right.
So if you're a football junkie like me, You got your fill all year long, basically.
Yeah.
There's no gaps. There's no hangover. There's no feeling like a junkie that needs that fix. You have it.
Got you.
You got football all the way up until when the big boys start.
Got it. Well, I appreciate you, brother. I really, really do, man.
So next week, let's have a little more insight and talk about a little bit more about these teams, the players, and who might be the favorite coming out of the XFL. And possibly some players that look pretty good that might be going to the NFL. So let's talk a little bit more about that next week, Brother B. Look, I got to get out of here. There's a game coming on at 4 o'clock this afternoon. I think I'm going to watch it. And I kind of encourage a lot of other people to know.
I'm going to watch it.
You can find it on ESPN, ESPN2. Check it out. You just might like it. And I'm talking about San Antonio versus Orlando.
I'm going to watch it.
Give it a shot. See if you like it or not. See what you don't like about it. Maybe your listeners will, you know, talk about it. Say what they like. Say what they don't like. Say that the NFL is just for them and this is just some garbage. I don't think it is because I like football.
Right, right.
So that's my take on it, Brother B. I will talk to you next week. Enjoy your week. Have a happy Sunday. I am out of here. Peace.
All right, Petty. Have a good week, brother. Peace. Well, there you have it. You heard it from the Petty's mouth. And no, the XFL is not the NFL, but the talent pool is still great and it's growing. And as the season continues, the competition will get better and better, which makes for better games. All right, well, it is Black History Month, and I wanted to drop a little black history on you. Now, many of us know about the history of the Buffalo Soldier, but what we don't know, most of us, is that there was one and only one female Buffalo Soldier. Posing as a man named William Cathay, Cathay Williams enlisted in the 38th Infantry in 1866. She served for 2 years before a doctor discovered that she was actually a woman, which led to her discharge. Williams was born to an enslaved mother and a free father in Independence, Missouri in 1844. In her adolescence, she worked as a house slave on a plantation on the outskirts of Jefferson City, Missouri. In 1861, Union forces occupied Jefferson City during the early stages of the Civil War, and at that time, captured slaves were officially designated as contraband, and some served in military support roles, such as cooks or nurses. What makes Cathay Williams an American hero is though over 400 women served in the Civil War posing as male soldiers, Williams was the first African-American woman to enlist and the only documented woman to serve in the United States Army while disguised as a man during the Indian Wars. And documents suggest that although doctors took 2 years to figure out that she was a woman, her fellow male soldiers figured that part out shortly after she arrived. But because she rode, shot, and roped so well, they never reported her to be anything other than what she claimed to be. So here's to Cathay Williams, the one and the only female Buffalo Soldier. All right, well, that wraps up my hour with you this morning. I want to thank Annette March Greer for stopping by today and dropping so much knowledge about Roberta's House. Listen, they are a nonprofit. Please support them. Hopefully, you'll never have to use their services. But if you do, just remember that their services are free, and Annette and her staff are always there waiting for you with open arms. I want to thank the Petty for coming on today and dropping some knowledge about the XFL, the new league that we have to get used to. And, you know, they are not the NFL names that we're used to, but the games are good, they are competitive, and they are entertaining, and that's all I need. I also want to thank you for stopping by today. Thank you for being a part of this show with me, this journey with me. And please get at me on IG at On with Brian Pettaway. Give me some feedback. Tell me your opinions on Dwayne Wade and his daughter Zaya, who just had her name legally changed at 15 years old. And also just give me feedback about the show in general. Your feedback helps me grow, helps the show get better, helps the station get better. We move based on what you tell us, and the more you tell us, the better we can move. I also want to thank you for the letters and messages of condolences that I received about the loss of my Uncle Mickey, Andrew Cromer. That meant a lot to me and my family. But life goes on, and my Uncle Mickey is resting peacefully and is in a better place than all of us are right now. So thank you very much for that. Enjoy your Sunday, people. Relax. Do nothing today. Take the day off. But tomorrow, wake up and conquer the world like I try to do every Monday morning. Because remember what I say every week, and I'll continue to say. The best thing about doing nothing is you can quit whenever you want. I gotta go, people. Have a great Sunday. Peace.